You don't need a high-powered course in economics to tell you that when your cost of living rises, your standard of living automatically goes down. What happens to the cost of living directly affects the paycheck that the head of your family brings home each week, and the value of your savings and your bonds. So the question, what about our cost of living, is an important one for every American. And that's the subject Chester Bowles, Stabilization Director, is going to discuss in his transcribed talk this week. Mr. Bowles.
Hello, everybody. The other evening at our house in Virginia, we had a visitor from back home in Connecticut. And as usually happens, it wasn't long before we found ourselves talking about prices and rent control, and especially what's been happening to the cost of living in recent years. Our Connecticut friend was particularly anxious to know what's likely to happen to prices and rents in the months ahead. Because I felt that you and your family would also be interested, I thought I'd talk about this subject today. Clearly, the cost of living has gone up since Hitler invaded Poland way back in 1939, and it's gone up a lot more than either you or I would like. But we can be thankful for one thing at least. So far, we're in a whole lot better shape than we were in the similar period of World War No. 1. Under the price and rent controls, which have been in effect since the winter of 1942, prices and rents have risen only about one-third as much as they did in the disastrous inflation of the last war. Let's first of all see what happened then. At the end of the last war, when the armistice came in November 1918, prices already were 62% higher than at the start of the war. But unfortunately, the increase in prices didn't stop there. They continued to go right on up through the winter of 1939 and early 1920. Eggs went up to a dollar a dozen in some places. Sugar went from 6 cents a pound to 27 cents a pound. The prices of some meats actually doubled. Clothing prices tripled. Rents in many parts of the country doubled or tripled. Many of you can remember only too well those increases because you paid them in the stores. But some of us forget sometimes the tremendous importance of the price of steel and other basic commodities used for war equipment. Eventually, of course, we have to pay those prices through taxes. I wonder if you realize, for instance, that more than a third of the entire cost of the First World War came about because prices of so many raw materials, the materials used in the war weapons that we have to buy, were going up and up all the time. For example, copper prices almost doubled, and steel plates used in ships and tanks more than tripled. Well, by May 1920, the prices of food and clothing and everything else finally got so high that most people simply couldn't afford to pay them anymore. And then, of course, the bottom dropped right out of our economy. There were tens of thousands of Americans who lost their homes, their jobs, their farms, and their businesses back in the Black Depression of 1920 and 1921. Now let's see what exactly has happened to prices and rents in this World War period. A period, by the way, when the inflationary pressures have been far, far greater than during the last war a generation ago. The cost of living has gone up all right. We all know that. But it may surprise you to learn that by far the largest part of the increase that you see took place before there was any really effective price and rent control program. Let me explain what I mean by that. Rising prices and rising rents, the inflation that goes with them, have always gone hand in hand with war. That's just a matter of history. So prices began to rise here in the United States, actually long before we entered the war in 1941. From September 1939, that's nearly 7 years ago now, right on through 1942, the prices of nearly everything began to move up, slowly at first, and then more and more rapidly. As a result, by early 1943, the prices that you pay for food in the stores had risen 53%. Clothing prices were up 28%, and in many areas, rents had begun to increase. Then Congress passed a price control law in the winter of 1942, about 2 or 3 months after Pearl Harbor. But the government really didn't have the full authority and all the machinery and perhaps most important of all, the experience that we needed to really control prices and rents until April 1943. That was more than 3.5 years after the war started in Europe, and just about 3 years ago now. So now let's see what happened to prices and rents since our whole present system of rent and price controls was brought to bear, as I say, about 3 years ago. That's the only fair test of whether or not we as a people have done a reasonably good job of heading off inflation during this war period. The other night at home, sitting out on our front porch, I suggested to our visitor from Connecticut that she make a mental note of the prices that she pay next time she goes to a grocery store. For example, I think she'll find that a loaf of bread is no higher than the price she paid 3 years ago. She'll pay about the same, or just about the same, for most of the other basic foods. For milk, for instance, and meat and cheese and cereals and most of the canned goods. She'll also pay about the same for most of her fruits and vegetables. Although, of course, the prices of these will vary a little bit, up or down, depending on the crops, whether they're plentiful or not. Now, every housewife knows that food takes up by far the largest part of the average family budget. So I think we'll agree that it's important to all of us that the cost of food has been kept pretty well in line during the last 3 years. That is, since we really got control of it back in 1943 in May. Now, the next largest part of the average family's expenditures go for rent. If you live in an area that's under OPA rent control, and if you're living in the same house you rented, say, 3 years ago, I think the chances are fully 20 to 1 that you're still paying the same rent. However, when it comes to clothing prices, the record is definitely not good. Clothing, with all its different styles and types that change from year to year and season to season, has always been a tremendous problem to us. I believe that if we'd rationed clothing and apparel early in the war, and if we'd placed more firm and effective controls on how textiles would be used, I'm convinced that we could have done a much better job of keeping those prices in line. As it is, apparel price increases, even during the last 2 or 3 years, have been sharp and serious, and I believe the government has to take part of the full responsibility for that. On top of that, as we all know, the quality of much of our clothing has become shoddier. The record on price control on house furnishing isn't any too good either. But fortunately, clothing and house furnishings take together only a fraction of the average family's budget. That is, of course, unless you're a returning serviceman with a full new wardrobe to buy. So the increases in that general field have not been quite as serious to the average family as it would if prices of rents and food had gone up. Moreover, during the last few months, we've gotten a much better grip on those prices, that is, house furnishings and apparel. I really think if we get the legal authority to keep ceiling prices on these things after July 1st, that we can protect you against any further serious price rises in these fields. I wonder if you've ever wondered what would happen if there were no controls on prices and rents at all. I wonder if you wondered how high prices and rents would go if we took those controls off tomorrow. Of course, your guess is as good as mine. But if homes for rent are as scarce in your town as they are here in Washington, or in most cities throughout the country, it doesn't take much imagination to estimate what your rent would be if controls were taken off. We do know what's happened in several cases where price controls were lifted or removed too soon. Perhaps you remember what happened on oranges last Christmas, for example. The prices shot up overnight. In fact, they went up so far that we had to put ceiling prices back on again. Of course, we know, too, what's happened to the prices of things on which the government has never been given the legal authority to set ceiling prices. Take movie tickets, for example. In some parts of the country, they've gone from 40 cents to more than a dollar. Haircuts in many areas have gone up from 40 cents to 75 cents or a dollar. And permanent ways that used to cost you ladies $5 before the war often cost as much as $15 today. Or, more important than all of these, let's take houses and lots, or the rentals for stores and offices. The increases there have been an absolute scandal. I've urged and urged and urged that the government be given the authority by Congress to put a stop to those increases. But for the last 3 years, that authority has been withheld. Now, lately, I know that you've been hearing about price increases on this item or that one. And I know you've been wondering what effect they're going to have on the cost of living from here on out. For the first 5 or 6 months after VJ Day, we continued to hold prices pretty generally in line. But then beginning in March, we had to allow some increases, particularly on items like automobiles and washing machines and other household appliances, items which had been out of production all during the war. Now, most of these price increases had to be given in order to take care of higher manufacturing costs. And in many cases, the higher manufacturing costs resulted from necessary increases in wages. You know, when the war ended, many factories stopped working overtime. As a result, many hundreds of thousands of workers were transferred to lower-paying jobs. The result was a great many people were taking home only about one-third less pay, each week than they received during the war. That was a tremendous cut in the budget of a good many thousands of families. So the government allowed wage rate increases that would at least partially cushion this shock, this cut in the family budget of tens of thousands of families. However, even with those increases, the average worker's paycheck is still around 15% smaller than it was during the war. I think too many people fail to realize that. Now, believe me, we've worked hard to keep these increases in manufacturers' prices just as small as possible, and to keep them from affecting too seriously the prices that you pay in the stores. However, some adjustments were necessary in order to ensure that we would get the heaviest possible production of all the things that we want and need. Then, in addition, a short while ago, we had to make some price increases in the price of grains, wheat and corn and rye and other products like that. Those increases were necessary in order to get more grain for shipment to starving people overseas. What happens from here on depends chiefly on what happens to the price and rent control law, which is up before Congress right now. As you know, that law expires on June 30th, and that's only 6 weeks from now. Naturally, if our authority to keep the lid on your rent and on the prices you pay in the stores is weakened, your cost of living is going to go up. I know you realize that right now Congress is facing a crucial decision. But here's an important point. Even if we have a really effective price and rent control after July 1st, it isn't going to be easy to win the final victory in this fight against inflation. We'll need adequate funds for enforcement in order to crack the black market and for general administration. And we'll need the cooperation of all the groups in the country, farmers, businessmen, workers, and housewives. Until we get through these difficult months, we'll have to restrain a natural tendency to try to catch up with every little advantage that some other fellow has. So far, the American people have held the fort against inflation. When I look at the tremendous havoc wrought by inflation in Italy and China and France, all over the world in most countries, and back in our own country during the last war, I think that we have a tremendous right to be thankful. But unfortunately, our fight is not yet won. Almost overnight, we can lose the ground that we've held for these four difficult years. But believe me, I have a lot of faith that we as a people will summon all our courage and good sense in the dangerous weeks and months just ahead, and that we won't let the final victory over inflation, the fight to hold prices and rents in line, we won't lose that fight in the last round. And now, in the next week, goodbye to you all.
You have been listening to Chester Bowles, Stabilization Director, in another of his transcribed talks on economic problems confronting America today. This week, Mr. Bowles spoke on America's cost of living. The program came to you from Washington.